Y'all, I am just so pleasured to be here. I did find my way back to you. It's taken a few years, but I am so pleasured to be here. Now, y'all do need to excuse my Texas because I'm just flat out all the way. I've got a little country in me, and it comes out, and also have dyslexia, and I combine words like, it's just wonderful to be here. I mean, I just might do who knows what. Now see, it's not a doing a thing. I knew it'd do me this way. Oh! whenever they gave me the topic, you know, of happiness in your religion, it's worded something pretty different. Savoring the joy. Okay, I tried to really think about this, and I prayed about it. I was just sweating up a storm, figuring out where to go with that topic. And in the midst of it, I got to thinking about these two questions, because we live at a time when folks don't go to church anymore. In fact, I met somebody in the hotel this morning, and I just had the loveliest talk with her, and her daughter came along, and I was just so excited to meet her daughter, because you see, we have lots and lots of kids, and two of these kids have come to us from North Carolina, and their parents adopted us because their parents became Christians and didn't have Christian folks. In fact, their families, they couldn't even really have their kids around. It was that much of an ill influence. So they just kind of adopted us. And our house is the UN. We have all nationalities and complexions. And this family is a very dark-complected family. And no one ever understands when I introduce my grandkids. And they all look very perplexed. And we have to think a minute to figure out why. Because it's just so normal and natural to us. But Torrance had come to Faulkner both to be with us and to get a Christian education. And so he was living, he's in law school now. And well, this young lady, he one time had said to me, I said, I don't have any problem with who you date long as they're satisfactory. But the ones you're choosing, they just aren't. And I just can't flat figure it out where you're coming from on your choices. And so we're going to have to talk on that. But another thing I'm wondering is how come you keep on having the light complexions. Now, it just doesn't matter to me as far as that goes, but you got to think about the fact that your kids might get confused, because other kids that are here that are now your brother and sister are confused about what culture they are. So you got to think about the kids, and you got to think about your future and her future. And marriage is hard. It's hard, isn't it, guys? Marriage is rough. You got to work on it. And why do you want to borrow another dividend? That's not right, dividend. You know what I mean. And so he said, well, Memes, I want to show you something. And he took me to Walmart. And I thought, what are we going to get at Walmart? And he said, no, just look around. And I looked around, and I was perplexed. And he said, which one do you want me to take out? And I said, well, honey, we're at Walmart. That's not where I want you to choose them from. You're being sent to a Christian college. He said, oh, I already looked them all over. And I said, now, something here. And finally, I got him out of the grip of these two gals. I was so relieved. Well, this young lady, today at the hotel we're staying at, I got her email. She's not a Christian, but she went to a Christian school, and we'll teach her better. Oh, I like her. Oh, I like her a lot. And I was hoping she said she might could get through with her meeting and be over here today. So if a young lady shows up that says something about a lady at a hotel invited her or whatever, y'all just be real nice to her, because I got plans for her. She has her degree in something other, and she's working something. Anyway, that's beside the topic. I'm just saying, we in our Christianity need to make ourselves a family. We need to bear one another's burdens. It doesn't matter who was your literal blood family. If you're in the family of God, whatever that other person's problem is, that's your problem too. Whatever they're having to undergo, you need to undergo it and share it with them, if it's joy or if it's sadness. You know, Papa mentioned about our grandchild that died a few years ago. And the part of the story he didn't tell was how our daughter amazed us. Because she said, when we got there, "I can't get Jim, her husband, to quit apologizing." You see, they had a brand new baby, and she was in the bedroom nursing the baby. And her daughter had been tending to that young grandson. His name is Jared. And she had set him in front of the TV to watch a Your Child Can Learn to Read program. And she had slipped off to the shower because the new baby had burped up on her. So she went to take a quick shower, and Julie was nursing, and Jim was caught on the telephone, and the electricity went out on just one plug. It was the plug that had the DVD and the microwave. And that little young man immediately turned to look for something else to do and saw the back door, and the dog jumped up on the back door, seeing him look at him and acknowledged him, and he goes for the dog, and the dog, which was big, slapped the handle as he came down, which his weight pressed the door open, and Jared went out to see the dog. And there was no one outside, and he and the dog must have joined themselves in the pool. We don't really know that part. In that 10-minute period of time, when one baby was being nursed and another one got distracted while the daughter was in the shower and the son-in-law was on the phone. Now, you can look for blame in that, but there is no blame. It happens. Life happens. But the neat thing that my daughter said was that she said to Jim, when he kept saying, "I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry," and she said, "Jim, he had God's permission, Satan did. He had to have God's permission. And if it wasn't today, then it would have been tomorrow or the next day. This was going to happen. And if it's our test, if we are to make God glorious by our reaction, if we are to shame Satan and embarrass him and glorify God, then you have got to stop apologizing, and we just need to get to bearing this." I was just amazed and appalled, and I said, "Where did you get that?" And she said, "Well, from you and Dad." And I said, "You didn't get it from us. We didn't ever have anything akin to this happen to us." And she said, "But there was all kind of things that did happen, and you always said the same kind of thing." So somehow or another, We're preparing our children by the way we're behaving and how we handle even smaller things. So that when that dastardly thing happened that I always prayed wouldn't happen, I didn't know if I could cope with losing one of my children, and yet it happened in the next generation, and my child could handle it. But he didn't mention that part to you, but we're women and we think different. Anyway, is your religion satisfying to you? Is it well with your soul? I thought about those a whole lot, and I decided they're the same thing. Because the condition of your soul determines your satisfaction. Okay. Now, I tried to think, and I talked to Dave a long, long time, and I was real concerned about it because he's pretty smart, and I don't even pretend to do that. But he said, well, just put your thoughts down, and I'll make head or tails of them. So wasn't that kind? So I have to give him credit, because any head or tails you get out of this, well, that'll be him. He knows how to make real good PowerPoints, and to me it's just another language. We're going to determine who God is and what Christianity is by examining the Holy Book of God's laws, prophecy, history, and poetry. Now, the reason we're going to do that, you say, what is that about? Well, he suggested to me that I'm kind of a visual learner and a life experience learner. So his point is, go back in your history and figure out what has made it possible for at 65 you to endure the amount of things you have endured. And then make that where they can get the same thing. So that's what I'm going to attempt. And I'm going to word it in a different kind of a way. We are to put on the whole armor of God. So if we're going to start at the beginning, I have to take my armor off. And that means all the different things that we use as our body armor. And part of that would be like my friends here and our families, whoever we call upon in those times that are challenging to us, that's part of our armor. And then part of our armor is religion, and part of our armor is the Word. So that's why that's up there. And what concerns me in our world where people don't go to church and where it's been taken out of the schools, folks aren't getting religion. And the ones that are coming maybe don't know how to approach getting to know how to use the Bible, how to understand God, and how then they're ill-prepared for those moments. So I'm taking my armor off and I'm going back in history, and we're going to do this thing together because we're sisters and that's what we're going to do. If and I can make this work. All right. Now this is not your regular Bible summary chart. This one's mine because I made this based upon the way women look at things. It's based on relationships. It's kind of divided up for people. If you don't know where things are in the Bible, it's kind of a Bible timeline based upon Bible characters. Okay, so we start out in the Garden of Eden, and you know that's Adam and Eve, and they immediately get in the sin. And immediately we are given a provision for redemption. And what is that promise? Who's that going to be? Jesus. We're immediately given that just from the get-go. Then you got the flood. Who's that? Noah. And the stories of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And it ends in Genesis with Joseph, the coat of many colors. You remember that story. Then you get Moses. And that huge, great journey, that's Exodus through Deuteronomy. It not only entails his exit from Egypt and taking all the Israelites out of their slavery, but it entails all the things they do in the desert wanderings, and entails making of the tabernacle. It entails different things that happen when they set people up in the structure of their worship services. And those are all important things. It also entails the laws that God set them under. Now, people don't like laws, but I'm a retired nurse, and I can tell you right now that those are some of the most beautiful laws ever created. They protected them from health issues. They were, a lot of them, cleanliness laws. But they also made them prepared to approach God properly. And that's something that's lacking in our world too. You know, it's always been, take off your shoes, you're standing on holy ground. It's always been, if you're going to approach him, do it the way he asks you to do so, which is only polite. We're not respectful if we don't take our shoes off in someone's house, that's their habit, you see. And he wanted certain ways, certain things done for his worship. Now, he asked certain things be done in today's worship, too. And it's not polite of us to go onward and make up our own rules just because we might like something better. Bring in instruments that aren't mentioned for New Testament worship. Have baby, you know, dedications in the middle of worship. Have clapping and making a big circus out of it, making it just a revelry, instead of being respectful and thinking of Christ's death, which is what we're asked to do on a Sunday. So when we think of those laws, they're just respectful to God and respectful to other things. Wait a minute, that wasn't the rest of it. Go back a minute. Here we go. Okay, next comes after Moses, Joshua, and conquering of it. And you remember Jericho? You'd find the story of Joshua and Jericho in that one. I can get up here, can't I? Right there. That's the book of Joshua. The period of the judges. Okay, you'd find in there Deborah and Barak. And you'd find Samson and Delilah. Y'all have heard those stories. If you hadn't, or if it's been a long, long time, go back and read them. Period of the kings came right after that. And you know, Saul, David, Solomon. That's during the period of the United Kingdom. Then the sons of David got on the outs with each other, just like we sometimes do in families. And they ended up dividing the whole kingdom up, and it stayed divided up the rest of the time. Then you have the period of captivity, because they became disrespectful to God, and they ended up going into captivity for it. And they had prophets that warned them and the whole time for the Israel. That was one of the kingdoms, the northern kingdom. And Judah, which was the southern kingdom. These were the kingdoms that were divided from the brothers' quarrel. All right, then they're both taken into captivity. The northern kingdom goes first, and then Judah also gets bad and goes into captivity. That's all those prophetic books. Then Ezra, Nehemiah, that's them coming back, the restoration of the temple, laws, walls of Jerusalem. This period of captivity, that's where you find Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. That's also where you find the story of Esther. Ruth, by the way, can be found right up there before the between the judges and the kings. Okay, so why am I saying all this to you? Well, we like people. We like the stories. All of this... this is all the Old Testament, and it actually ends in your Bible there. And then there's a long period of silence before it begins with Jesus' birth. But Jesus lived under the law of Moses. That needs to be remembered. That's very important that you understand he was always under the law of Moses. And now we live under the Christian era, correct? Okay. under this... Matthew through John, during the life of Jesus, there's all those wonderful stories you hear about the apostles and Mary and her standing at the foot of the cross. I love thinking of that. Just think she was amazing. And then Acts is the fulfillment of the plan of salvation. That's where the church starts. Then Romans through Jude, how to live as a Christian. That's all those letters that were written by Paul and various ones, Peter, to help us have strength and how to handle things that happen in the church. And Revelation, well, that's how to die as a Christian. We can look at it, because it's already happened. It's not premillennial, the way they say it. It happened back at the time of the persecutions. But for us, we can look at Revelation as it's a book of victory, our victory. If we can get through all these trials and tribulations of life, it's going to be our victory. All right, now, these top ones up to right here, all of those books are to help us know who God is. That's how you get to know God. If you're saying God is not alive in my life, I don't think, he's not active, he's not, why do I need to pray to him? He doesn't hear it. Start out with those stories I've just mentioned. Go back and read them because they come from the mind of God. He picked out these true historical figures. And if you read those stories, you see what he was thinking and you see how he reacts and you see how humans react to him. And that helps you get an understanding of how he's thinking today when the same types of things happen. Now, you may think God has changed, but he doesn't. He's not capable of changing. He's exactly the same. The reason that the New Testament's written the way it is because now he's not telling us the same things. It's not under the same laws. And it's because the new law that came with the church, it's a completely different, it's apples to oranges. He's coming along trying to tell us that now that the blood has been spent, the perfect sacrifice was made, and we can look towards heaven more completely. It's not that they didn't have the capability of being saved, but we have the full picture, like it said, the glass darkly, but then face to face. We can see, we have the whole picture. We have the entire Bible, and they didn't. So in the New Testament, not only are you learning through the life of Christ and the way he handled things, but we're gaining the church and a plan of survival. And that's incredible. That is incredible. So if you're missing that, if you haven't read that, if you're not trying to understand God that way, you're missing some real stuff in your life that helps you. And I would like for you to also be introduced to the fact that my son, and this is not an advertisement for that, but it really is true. He's real good musically, and he made a CD that has a lot of songs on it that are actual scriptures. They're just literally from the Bible. And the scriptures he chose are to try to help us to be able to teach others. So if you ever think, I can't sit down with my friend and teach him because I don't know where to go. It's got to be the preacher. I don't have the tool. So this is one way that he figured out to do it, that people will sing a song and they'll accidentally memorize it. And then they might be able to have a handle on where to go in the Bible for the verses that will help them attain salvation. So I think that was a pretty cool idea, and I want you to know about that. It's actually called Kids Prep, and it's for little kids. But I accidentally put it in my car and listen to it all the time, and I recommend it. I learned a whole bunch of them. Okay, now, if we're talking about God's laws, and we sum them up, because Jesus said you can sum them up, In Matthew 22:37, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. He said, on these two hang all the law and prophets. Now, if that being the case, if all the law and prophets hang on those two commandments, then what are some of those commandments? Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Don't lie against your neighbor. Don't commit adultery. Don't even covet the things your neighbor has. Those are your good neighbor laws, the last five of the Ten Commandments. Now, you say we hate laws? You want anybody doing any of those things to you? It was a very kind thing for God to make those laws to help us behave ourselves. But we oughtn't really to need them, but we seem to all the time. I don't know about you, but I've talked about my neighbor a time or two. I'm sorry I did, but I have. I don't guess I've murdered anybody, but I might have thought about it sometimes. That's the truth. You know, every law in the United States or any other country is supposed to be for the protection of the innocent. Now, they've just gone wacky-woodle with all the laws they've made. But that was the original purpose, which goes back to the Bible, those laws I just purported. So, for instance, if you were truly everybody in the whole world practicing Christianity, and y'all pulled up to an intersection and there weren't yet stop signs, why, nobody could go. Because everybody would want the other person to, oh, no, you first. Oh, no, you first. And we'd be sitting there all day long because everybody would want everybody else to go in front of them. It'd be hard to get a line at the grocery store because everybody would be saying, no, you go, you go. And we'd have a hard time. You see, there really isn't a reason to have national laws if people are unselfish. A law is needed when we're selfish. You can't have an argument unless somebody's thinking of themselves. And you can't get someone to say they're sorry and end the argument unless somebody decides to be unselfish. Isn't that right? So when God's talking about love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself, what he's really saying is approach God in an unselfish way and approach your neighbor in an unselfish way. And get yourself under control about that. And then national laws and state laws and local laws have to be made because, well, we're just selfish. The sins committed by disobeying these laws can only be avoided by unselfish motives. Now, we're supposed to be in the world, not of the world, set apart. So don't you suppose that also relates? If we set ourselves apart to be holy, it means we're not partaking in immoral and bad things of the world. Now, that might seem to some to be saying, you're not wanting us to have fun. But have you ever known anything good to come from an alcoholic's family? Have you ever known anything good to come from gambling? You might see somebody every once in a while win just a little bit, but then they're so hooked, they can't seem to help but go right back and spend not only that, but everything else that their kids needed for school. So when we're talking about immorality, we're talking about things that lead to selfishness. Now, why would that be selfish? Well, if you don't act properly after you drink, and you might hurt your family physically, or you might hurt them emotionally, or you might hurt them financially. Same thing with any of them. So we have to have laws, and the laws aren't always perfect, and the laws aren't always protecting the innocent anymore, but they started out in America that way. Now, this is so sad. In this world, nobody thinks much about God anymore. He's so misunderstood because everybody doesn't like law. He's so little listened to or investigated. And we don't like to be controlled. None of us do. We don't like it. And so we think law is our enemy. But without laws, we'd be in a fix, y'all. There's one fact not considered in that proposition. You're still going to be ruled, even without laws, if you go completely to a place that has no laws. It's just that there will still be selfish people, and nothing will control those selfish people. You're going to be in a fix. We tend to view our religion as a religion of thou shalt nots. And he does, thou shalt not. He does say that. But every one of the thou shalt nots are to protect us. Bad things that wouldn't make us happy. And that's what we have to get people to understand in this time of not liking God. And another thing that I don't have on there, but I'm hearing the Lord's name taken in vain every day. And I'm thinking that folks aren't meaning to do it. I think that anymore they're ignorant. You see kids texting OMG. You see on the home improvement shows when they go in and they say OMG. They always say it's the first thing out of their mouth. They actually take the Lord's name in vain. They're not meaning for the Lord to look at the house. They're just taking his name in vain. It means nothing to them. And yet the Lord considers that very personally offensive. So while we're thinking about the way he's disrespected, I sure wish that we as Christian sisters could help our families and the young kids. I take people all the time, and I've got a rule in my car: you don't take the Lord's name in vain, or you'll be walking back. We're living in a time when we as women, we're going through a lot of things. It's real and actual. I work with a lot of folks who have endured these things and are enduring these things. Health issues. My eldest daughter has a terminal illness. My second daughter is married to a man with a terminal illness. He had a new kidney and it's on the way back down. Don't know if he'll die from the illness first or from the kidney giving out. The third child, Jeff, he has endured cancer and it's in remission right now. And that's a good thing. My youngest daughter had a tumor in her uterus and all those organs were taken out. Her husband gave his kidney to the second son-in-law, and so he has problems from that. I have seven different conditions. We understand about health problems. Those are things God gave our family, and we're so proud to be able to endure them because those are the ways that God gets to shine. If we endure something, we are given the opportunity for him to say to Satan, "See, people will love me. People will endure these things. People will not turn and curse me. Not all of them. Not these few. Not this remnant. Not these Christians." So if we as Christians spend all our time worrying about those things and having a bad attitude about those things and having to, if we can't make lemonade out of them, we're shaming our God. Just a thought. Okay. I have no idea what I just did. Help.
Can you say anything?
I think I pushed this thing. What do I do? Oh. Yep. Okay. Now, we know this about our sisters. If we get tired of laws, we have a tendency to want to make our own choices. And we think that we have a right to our own career. And some even, you know, they get into a jam finding themselves with a lover or something. I did it again. We might end up with a divorce. And then we find that that didn't make us feel any better. We can believe that exiting out of the things that are restraining us will make us happy, but that's not the problem. And that's not the solution either. Because Satan has just used those things to entrap you, and now he is in control of the situation. So we have to plan ahead. We have to think ahead and think of these things. All these things that happen in our lives, they're meant to make you lose your faith. They're meant to make you discouraged. That's why we have to plan ahead. And I don't want you to think that that didn't happen to us either, because Pop and I, we had marital troubles a while back. I told you I'm taking my armor off. I'm just bearing my soul. We had a hard time where we not only fell out of love, we fell out of like. In fact, we got plumb apathetic about each other. But we stayed together, and you say, well, that you just leave yourself in misery. No, we decided it was a commitment that we had made, and that we did love the Lord, and what we decided to do was divide the house up. And this was a procedure that happened every night after the children went to bed, and we roped the house off. And if he had anything to say to me, he had to come to the children's hall and knock on the wall. Because I was sleeping in the floor in the midst of my children's rooms, and he had the other side of the house. And the reason I did that is because a lot of times what gets wrong with us is a lack of respect. So we just had to clear the walls. We had to reboot, what the computer term is, and start all over again. And we had to show respect to each other, and we had to approach each other, and everything that we said had to be as if it was a first date. And just decide to get to a point where we could respect one another and then like one another and then fall back in love again. And I want you to know that took 10 years. That was a whopping big chunk out of 44 years of marriage. But we did. And now we're inseparable. And now we're the best friends who want to... He said, well, when I die, if I die first, I want to be cremated and put the ashes in your casket. Isn't that sweet? But he didn't know I plan on being cremated too. So I don't know what we're going to do about that. Just combine the two or something. We think we're getting our freedom when we run from responsibilities. But had you ever thought that even suicide won't do that for you? Because on the other side, we know from the rich man and Lazarus, you're quite conscious. So you're not going to just be laying there like with a lily in your hand, not ever have to think again. It will. You're still going to be conscious on the other side. So whatever was a bothering you that a minute, you're taking it right with you on the other side of the veil. And now you're stuck with that very last thought for eternity. If you choose to sin, your own freedom to choose, that just enslaved you to sin, and for Satan, that's match set. All creation bows to something or someone. I had a good thought about that one day. I can't remember. Oh, when we try to make a new plan with ourselves, it's, oh, don't laugh. I can't help it.
That's awesome. Because I feel the same way.
Oh, I know. When we try to make a new plan with ourselves as a sinner, Yeah, we're taking the place of God. That's right. That's what it was. We're taking the place of God. I had to think about that. God can't be a part of something where there's no room for him. Now, so that'd be plumb a shame. So if we make ourselves, if we think we're getting out of this by doing it our way, well, we just lost him on that one. We spend too much time talking about me and not enough talking about God. But God wants us to be happy. You know, if we understand that this is the testing ground here, that that's what we're here for, and if you understand that when God made it, he made it with gravity. So if you jump off a house, you're going to have some injury. He made it with all the things of life that are good and all the things that can be bad, and that you have to respect it, and that he's not going to keep you from any of those things, because he blessed us with freedom of choice. And that's why we're made in the image of God. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. He will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those that walk uprightly. And now you got to understand that that's for those who walk uprightly. You know, it's real easy to think. I hear non-Christians saying that. Well, they're not walking uprightly. And the Bible also says that if you are continuing in sin, he will not hear your prayer. So if we're in a fix, you know, he tells us to confess our faults one to another. We don't do that as good as the Catholics. They go to confessional all the time. Now, their solution to it is a bunch of rosary beads, and that doesn't get anybody anywhere. But we're the opposite. We don't want to tell each other what we've done. But he says, confess your faults one to another. That somehow is something that the human soul needs, like AA, when you get up at the front and you say, I'm Deb and I'm a recovering alcoholic, or I'm a recovering addict. That is something that I would need to say if I had that issue, which I don't. But I could, because I'm a Cherokee and it's in the blood. So I dare not even taste. Do not think it strange concerning the fire trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice in the extent that you partake of Christ's suffering, that when his glory is revealed, you may be glad with exceeding joy. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit and glory and of God rest upon you, on the part that he's blasphemed, but on your part he's glorified. So we got to rejoice for all these things that are happening to us. Man, that's a hard one. He says, let all those who seek you rejoice, glory in his name, rejoice in the Lord, shout joyfully. You should be glad and rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord always. Seems to me like he wants us to be happy and rejoicing. So why aren't we happy? Why aren't we happy? Are we happy? A lot of Americans, I mean, they're shooting each other. They're cussing at each other. They're yelling at each other in grocery lines. They're being so rude nowadays compared to when I was a little girl. You know, I don't know why. Not exactly happy. I don't think most of us are exactly happy, and yet we are the top 1% of the world in that you can't even get a good bathroom in Europe. I mean, it's fixing to be that way for us here when they're having the men come in our bathrooms. We're going to be in a mess too. But, you know, we have air conditioning. King Solomon didn't have air conditioning. We have so many things that the world has never had. The inventions of the world came right out from here. This is such a blessed country, and yet we don't think we have what we need and want. He sold us a bill of lies here and makes us think that if we have more, then we'll be happy. Like a kid at Christmas. Then they'll be happy. Just give me this and then I'll be happy. But in fact, those things don't bring happiness. So Satan's first lie is that we'd be happy if our desires were fulfilled. We don't know what we want. We don't know what we really need. Happiness is being happy with what we have and not what we do not have. It seems logical, doesn't it? We don't know what we want. We just want. And it seems to be human nature. I mean, Eve saw that apple and she wanted it. She wanted it from the get-go. And we like anything that glitters. You know, the American Indians sold New York for a bunch of beads. You know that was for the women folk. When we get what we want, we're just satisfied. And we don't want it anymore. Sometimes unhappiness is envy of a neighbor. We're about as happy as make up our mind to be. That's Abraham Lincoln. It's not a place or condition, but mind alone that can make one happy or miserable. We may not have a choice over one's happenstance, but we have a choice to be happy. That seems like it's not deep, but that's really deep. I mean, we have a choice to be happy. No matter what happens to us, we have a choice to be happy. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. It can't be found in having everything we desire. The counselors say, and I went and asked and read about it, they actually do say this, that when you ask a person what happiness would look like to them, in almost every case, the unhappy person describes happiness in terms of things they would like to have, not what they currently have. Boy, what does that say? As a nation, we're not happy. We're greedy. But Solomon actually got everything he wanted and said in his heart, "Come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. Whatever my eyes desired, I didn't keep it from them. I didn't withhold any pleasure." But was he happy? He wasn't happy. If you allow your desires to be unrestrained, they will always exceed what you're capable of acquiring. You can't name any amount of money that would bring a person happiness if he doesn't first learn to restrain his own desires. And it is good for us to not fully get what we want. I'm going to give you the lies real quick. We can only be happy if our talents are as good as or better than somebody else. We hold ourselves back because we say we can't do it as well as somebody. I never played the piano because my sister could play it good. Now that's just ridiculous. God has given us the potential to be what we can be, and the rest is up to me. Gave talents. I'm going to skip through this. We got to begin with our attitude. That's what's behind it all. If we can conquer our attitude, conventional wisdom, if you're not happy where you are, just leave. That's not true because at the next place you have the same set of criteria, the same types of people, but most of all, we still are the same. You know the story of the town where the fellow sat at the gate of the town and a new person was coming to town and they said, "Am I going to like this town?" And he said, "Well, what was it like at the town you were at last?" And the fellow said, "Well, it was just awful." You know, and he lists all the things that were awful to him that made him unhappy about it. And the gatekeeper said, "You're going to find the same thing here. You're just not going to be happy." 5 minutes later, another man came and said the same thing to him. "Am I going to be happy here?" And the gatekeeper said, "Well, what was it like at the last town you were at?" And he said, "Was wonderful. It was like spring every day. We had the best this and the best that and the best other." And the gatekeeper said, "This town's just like that." Now, why would that be? Because it's the person that makes the choices in life that makes it good or bad for them. Lie number 3, we have a right to complain. Now, this one I'm going to go through, and you're going to have to sit here because you're getting it. Israelites developed something while they were slaves in Egypt that they never got over. Do you know what it was? Their cries. Their cries, their murmuring and complaining. And again, in Exodus 16:2, when the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, in their hearts they turned back to Egypt where they were slaves. That's something. God finally had to kill them to get it out of them. They just kept on complaining. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation that murmur against me? I've heard the complaints which the children of Israel murmur against me." We women, this is why I'm bringing it to us, we women can be guilty of misuse of our tongues. Young widows learn to be idle, wandering from house. Oh, that's worded that way. We do learn to be idle, is what that means. Not don't learn to be idle. It means we do learn to be idle, wandering from house to house, telephone to telephone or whatever, and gossips and busybodies saying things that we ought not. Now, why didn't it say the young men? It says the young women. The mouth of an immoral woman is a deep pit. The seductress who flatters with her words. You know, there's four different proverbs about this. A ring of gold in a swine's snout. So is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. She didn't know when to keep her mouth shut. Proverbs 21. Better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than a house shared with a contentious woman. Better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than a house shared with a contentious woman. A continual dripping on a very rainy day and a contentious woman are like. Now, I have suspicions. They're just suspicions because we weren't there. That murmuring that went on out in the wilderness, there was some women behind it. Don't you think? I mean, he goes on and on. We women can be so guilty of the misuse of our tongue. And I think it behooves us to be a little late for a piece of corn to think about that just for a minute. Now, I'm going to tell you, she says, you know, don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Call me bitter. Now, what in the world? What in the world? That's the story of Ruth. Just call me bitter. Proverbs 31:26, the worthy woman, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and her tongue is the law of kindness. Oh, I'm going to try for that one. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. Every time I read that, I think to myself, yeah, that's why she got chosen and I didn't. If we complain about the preacher's sermon, now listen to me, or a decision of the elders, we're guilty of the very same thing. And guess who hears? Mark it down. Our children hear us, and they develop an attitude about the church and religion. So how did we get where we are today that no one's going to church? Oh, I hope we women don't have something to do with it, but we got to get a grip. For three things, the earth is perturbed. A hateful woman when she's married. I didn't even bother with the others. That's enough right there. Yikes. Yikes. God's intention is for us to be happy. He's given us the raw materials, everything to be happy. At some point, it becomes a choice. We're not choosing to have only good things happen, but we are choosing to be happy no matter what happens. We're not choosing to go through life without problems. We are choosing to meet those problems with an attitude of happiness and joy. Here's the last one. Our bad actions are someone else's fault. That's Satan's lie. They say we shouldn't have to take responsibility for our actions. Isn't that what America's saying? Isn't that what the world is saying? We shouldn't have to take responsibility? If we do not take personal responsibility for your actions, you'll never grow or improve. That's from AA. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you can be healed. If you're looking everywhere around for someone to blame, which is a very powerful force, blame is. Blame, 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 blame. That's spiritual failure. If you're not happy, find a mirror. You're the source of the problem. You have the power to choose to be happy. You choose to be happy. If I decide I'm going to be happy, no one can stop me from being happy. They do not have the right. They do not have the power. If you choose to be a happy child of God, no one can stop you from that either. I'm sorry I got talking too long. Let's go get some corn.